Few minutes later, the attachment came through. It also looked a lot like Chris. Boone wasn't sure what to make of it all. He would have to talk to Dana about it privately as soon as he could. Boone called up the college Chris worked for and looked at the recruiters listed. Boone's gut clenched as he thought about telling Dana his suspicions. Maybe this could be resolved by talking to Chris. They'd been friends for a while. Boone couldn't wrap his head around his own suspicions. He glanced at the clock. Only 1:30. If he could catch Chris before Dana got home from work, maybe he'd get some answers. Chris picked up on the first ring. "Hey, Boone, good to hear from you." "Hey, buddy, you alone?" "Yeah, just downtown at the cafe for lunch. Dana had to work today. What's up?" His voice held a touch of wariness. This wasn't going to be easy. Boone stood and paced the floor. "Did you ever meet my sister, Renee?" "Nope. She never visited when I was in town." "You doing okay, Boone? You sound stressed." Something in his tone made Boone doubt he cared about his stress or anything else. "So you never attended a party in Washington or Arizona or met her there?" "Not to my knowledge. What's this all about?" Boone looked at the picture on his computer screen, then flipped to the police composite. It had to be Chris or his doppelganger. But how could Laurie's ring be the same? Nothing made sense. "I got a copy of the files on Renee's phone. There's a picture of you at a party she attended." The silence on Chris's end of the conversation grew so long, Boone wasn't sure Chris was going to answer. "Chris?"
"I'm not sure what your accusation is all about, Boone."
Chris's voice was as cold as the wind outside.
"You traveled to Washington as well, and there's a police sketch of Tyler Dixon that looks a lot like you."
"Who's Tyler Dixon?"
"You know what? Scratch that question. I don't care who he is, but I don't like your tone. I'm hanging up now. You can call our friendship over."
The phone went dead, and Boone ended the call. Had his own friend killed his sister and his cousin? His chest squeezed as he struggled to control his grief. He'd been blind. He had to tell Dana she might be living with a maniac. Boone tried to call her, but it went to voicemail, so he hung up and called Detective Morgan's number. He had to leave a message for the detective, so he just asked him to call. He prayed he was wrong, but he couldn't risk Dana's life by leaving it. Once he talked to Morgan, he'd tell her.
Chapter 31. The beeping from low fuel caught Dana's attention as she pulled away from the curb after work on Monday to head home. She turned around and drove toward the city limits. Concola Service Station was the only place in town to get gas, and it was on the corner of Whisper Pike and Houghton Street. Only one other vehicle was at the pumps when she pulled in. She'd have to pay inside, so she started the flow of gas and went inside. A man behind the counter looked up with a smile when she entered. His mechanic's clothing threw her for a minute, then she placed his face. "Corey? Corey Gibbons?" His smile faltered, then came flooding back. "Dana Newell. As I live and breathe, I'd heard you were in town, and I figured you'd eventually make an appearance here. Everyone in town does, sooner or later." He hadn't changed much, and her smile froze as her shoulders tightened. His grin endeared him to most people, and his copper coloring and freckles put her in mind of Rupert Grint, who played Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter movies. One change was that she caught the glint of a wedding ring on his left hand. She'd once daydreamed about marrying him herself. "My Prius doesn't need gas very often, but here I am." She glanced at the clock on the wall above his head. There was a little time to chat, though everything in her wanted to run. "How have you been?"
"Fine, just fine."
He wet his lips and took a step forward, then paused when she flinched and stepped back.
"I had a speech all prepared, and now that you're here, I can't remember what I wanted to say."
He ran his hand through his longish red hair.
"I'm sorry. That's about all I can remember of that speech. Really, sorry I scared you like that."
She fingered the tiny scar, a visible reminder of that night by her right eye. "I forgave you long ago, Corey. Why'd you do it, though? That's what I've always wondered."
"I hero-worshipped Chris. And I would have hijacked a car if he told me to. I didn't stop to think how it would scare you."
She frowned.
Chris? What's he have to do with it? Confusion clouded Corey's eyes. He told me he confessed. You didn't know?
She clenched her fists together.
Confessed what? It was all his idea to have you come with us to the abandoned boat, then leave you. I didn't want to do it, and he talked me into it. Was this some kind of joke?
Chris would never do that. He was the one who had found her the next morning, huddled in a corner, after having cried out every tear in her eyes. He soothed her and comforted her, and since she'd gotten back to town, he'd even said something about punishing Corey back then for what he'd done.
She finally found her voice.
I don't believe you.
He blinked and held out his hand, the fingers stained with grease.
It's true. Ask Chris.
Why would he do that? It doesn't even make sense.
He never told me.
Corey hesitated. Chris could be a little different, and I went along with him. You ever see his trophy box?
Trophy box?
Yeah, all the people he's gotten even with. He keeps a tally.
Her hand shook as she fumbled for her debit card. I have to go. I got gas on pump, too.
It's on me. That's the least I can do. I'm really sorry, Dana.
She didn't stop to argue with him, but dashed outside into the wind. Though Corey had urged her to ask Chris about it, she wasn't sure how she could even bring it up, not without sounding like she believed Corey. And she didn't. She got in the car and slammed the door with more force than necessary. The sound of the door closing took her back to the hatch, snapping shut over her head. She sat on the back porch steps and swiped tears off her cheeks. Chris had said she couldn't come with him to the old boat lying on its side on a deserted Lake Superior beach. They were going to have a campfire and roast marshmallows, and while that sounded like fun, the real reason for her low spirits was she'd hoped to sit by Corey. Though he was 5 years older than her, he was everything she wanted in a boyfriend. She had two whole notebooks filled with his name. Not that her dad would think she was old enough for a boyfriend. At 12, she knew Chris and his friends considered her a kid. But she wasn't. She rose and walked into the yard, then picked up a rock and threw it as hard and as far as she could. It made a satisfying thunk against a tree. She might as well call a friend and see if she could go over there for the night. It would get her mind off all she was missing. She checked with her mom and was told it was okay to call her best friend Betsy, then picked up the wall phone in the kitchen. Before she dialed the number, Corey poked his head in the back doorway.
There you are.
He came inside and let the screen door slam behind him.
I was looking for you.
Her mouth dried.
You were?
She loved the way his hair fell over his forehead. Her fingers itched to stroke it. He nodded.
Want to go with us? Chris said it was okay. You can ride with me. Let's bounce.
Sure.
Her heart pounding and her face hot, she followed him out the door to his pickup. He didn't say much on the way to the boat, but he glanced at her from the corner of his eye a couple of times. Did that mean anything? Maybe he liked her, but thought he shouldn't because she was too young. Chris and two friends were already there when they got to the beach. They'd collected a big stack of firewood, and Chris's girlfriend Chloe had brought out the Hershey's bars, marshmallows, and graham crackers. No one said a word to her most of the evening, and she sat on the outside edge of the group. Why had she bothered to come? Corey hadn't paid her any attention.
Let's play hide-and-seek, Chloe said. I need to move.
Chris groaned.
I'd rather go swimming.
She ignored him and turned her back to a tree.
One, two, three.
Dana leaped to her feet and rushed away to hide. Corey held his finger to his lips and pointed at the old sailboat on the beach. The 35-foot sailboat's wooden hull had holes in multiple spots. It hadn't been on the water in years and sat decaying in the Michigan sun. They were going to explore it, but no one had made a move to look inside. She climbed onto the slanting deck and looked for a place to hide. The door to the inside was open, so she climbed down the ladder into the interior. A bit of light came through the many small holes in the side. No one would think to look for her here. The fabric covering the bench sofa was still in relatively good condition, so she settled onto it and waited to be found. She couldn't hear a thing but her own breathing. She focused her attention on the light shining from the open hatch above her. Just a few more minutes, and she could climb back out. They'd never find her here, so she just had to give it enough time. The minutes seemed to tick by so slowly. She rose and stretched. Surely it had been long enough. Before she could move toward the ladder, she heard quick steps above her, and she leaped back into the shadows. A jagged piece of metal sliced the skin by her eyes, and she bit back a screech. Her fingers came back wet. She must be bleeding. Then the hatch slammed shut above her, and the space plunged into darkness. Only the small amount of light from the holes in the hull allowed her to see a bit. "Hey, I'm down here!" She rushed to the ladder and climbed to the top, then pushed against the door. It didn't budge. She pounded on it. "Let me out! Hey!" She paused to listen but heard nothing. She climbed back down and looked for something to use to bang on the side, but everything was firmly attached. She went to the hull and pounded on it. "Someone let me out!" She scrabbled along the side to peer out a small hole. She could just make out everyone heading to their vehicles. "Hey, don't leave me!" The air squeezed from her lungs at the thought of being left here. Surely they knew she wasn't with them. But then why would they notice when no one had looked her way all evening? She'd sat on the edge of the group and hadn't said a word for hours. When the vehicles left, she looked around. There had to be a way to escape. Maybe she could break one of the holes bigger. But she had no tools, no way of figuring it out. When the sun finally sank and the space went pitch dark, she crawled along the dirty floor to the sofa, then curled up on its filthy surface and prayed for deliverance. But it was morning before Chris came for her. He said Corey had played a trick on her, but that he would take care of Corey. She took a deep breath as she shook off the memory and started the car. Had it all been a lie? She didn't believe it, couldn't believe it. It was more of Corey's mean streak. She started her car and drove for the house. She'd love to talk this over with Boone. It felt like forever since she'd seen him on Saturday. He was going stir-crazy since he got back in town. Maybe a hike through the woods would blow off some steam. Garrett parked along the road by Copper Lake and got out. The temperature hovered at 10 degrees, a bone-chilling cold that stung his face when he slipped on snowshoes. The bracing air perked him up, though, and he was ready to do something other than plan what he was going to do to Dana. The snow, hard and crunchy from the cold, squeaked against his snowshoes. His breath steamed the air as he trudged toward the iced-over lake. He paused on a small hill a few feet from the lake and watched an ice boat skim past in the center of the lake. The sound of scraping of the runners against the ice carried clearly in the cold air. He didn't want to be seen, though, so he retraced his steps back toward his truck. He'd only taken a few steps when his cell phone rang. With his teeth, Garrett yanked off his gloves and swiped at his phone.
"Chris, I've been waiting for your call."
"Good afternoon. I hope I'm not disturbing you."
Chris's voice held an edge.
"Nope. How's it going in your neck of the woods?"
"Could be better. I need to get Dana settled before I can't really help her anymore."
"Any chance you could hop a plane and get here by evening? Tomorrow at the latest."
Garrett grinned and did a fist pump with his left hand.
"I wasn't exactly honest when we spoke last. I'm not far away. Not in Rock Harbor, but within an hour. Where do you want to meet?"
Chris's displeasure was evident in the long pause before he spoke again.
"You didn't think you could trust me?
Do you blame me? You haven't tried to hide the fact you didn't think I was good enough for your sister.
That's all past now. I have to make sure Dana is safe."
"What's going on? You sound upset."
"Life is about to become a challenge, but it's too much to go into on the phone. I'll tell you more about it when I see you. Since you're so close, just wait for my call and I'll tell you where to come. Where are you now?"
Should Garrett tell him? He didn't fully trust Chris. What if it was all a trap to get him in custody? And what was all that "make sure Dana is safe" business? It was a little wonky.
"Garrett, did I lose you?"
He marshaled his thoughts.
"I'm here, near Copper Lake."
That would tell Chris the general direction without giving away too much information.
The place where I plan to have you meet us is between here and there, so just stay put. I'll call with more directions later this afternoon or tonight. Don't try to contact me or Dana until I call. I have to handle this carefully. You got it, buddy. Why was Chris being so vague? Something smelled off, but he couldn't put his finger on it. Still, he had Chris's approval now. Or so it seemed. The phone rang so long, Laurie didn't think Peter was going to pick up. Laurie, everything okay? He sounded perfectly normal, not at all stressed. There was some background noise, as if he was in a store. Laurie paced the floor of her bedroom and wished she was as calm as he seemed. She'd feel better once this was over. I saw you a little while ago, Peter. Did you follow me here?
What are you talking about?
You, here in Rock Harbor. I saw you go into a house on Quincy Street. Who lives there, and what are you doing here?
The pause lengthened before he finally cleared his throat.
A friend lives there. I was going to call you and let you know I was in town. Want to get some dinner tonight? For a second, she was tempted to let him soothe her fears, but she needed to be a grown-up now. I'd like to meet you, but not for dinner. I want to give you back your ring. We went into this way too quickly, Peter. Neither of us knows each other very well. I think it's best if we start over and just date until we are better acquainted.
Give my ring back?
You can't be serious. I thought you were the one, different from all the rest.
All the rest?
She didn't like the sound of that. You've been engaged before? He seemed not to hear her as he spewed out curses so fast she had a hard time following where his rage led him. She managed to break into his tirade. You can't be surprised. Not after our argument. We want different things in life.
Is this about having a house?
If that's important to you, we'll buy a house. It's not just that. I let myself get caught up in the romance of Hawaii. You're handsome and sophisticated, and I forgot that I didn't really know you. There's more to a marriage than physical attraction. We might be suited, but we need more time to know that.
You said you'd die before you hurt me. Now look what you're doing.
I'm disappointed in you, Laurie. You're not the person I thought you were. His tight, clipped voice vibrated with anger. She perched on the edge of the bed beside Zorro, who laid his head in her lap. Something in Peter's tone scared her. He had held back so much of himself from her. She didn't know if he had siblings or where he'd grown up. He deflected every personal question she'd asked him. She rose and walked to the window, then looked out onto Lake Superior, icing over with the extreme cold weather. It symbolized how the feelings she thought she had were icing over as well. Look, let's not get upset with each other. I'm not saying we're breaking up, just that I want us to move at a slower pace and not rush things. We'll both be in Phoenix next week, and we can go out like usual. I won't wear your ring until we know it's right, okay?
No, it's not all right. I don't take well to being treated like an afterthought, Laurie. I thought you loved me.
She watched a big ship move past on the water. I did. I do, but marriage is for a lifetime, and I want to make sure we're doing the right thing. He didn't answer right away, and she pulled the phone away from her ear to make sure the call was still connected. Peter? Are you still there?
I'm here. Let's meet so I can get the ring back.
His voice was terse. She suppressed a sigh. Laurie was pretty sure she could forget about seeing him in Phoenix or anywhere else. He was done with her.
Okay, where do you want to meet?
I need to check on my cabin by Chesil, but I'll be back in a few hours. I'll catch up with you later and get the ring.
Oh, and Laurie, you're going to be very sorry you did this. Very sorry.
The connection went dead, and she put down her phone. That hadn't gone well. She pulled off the ring and stared at it. That beautiful ring. She was mourning its loss more than Peter's, and that was a sad situation for sure. She slipped it in the pocket of her jeans and went to find Bree and Cade in the living room. The kids were playing a board game with Samson in their midst, and she plopped between Bree and Cade on the sofa. I called Peter and told him I was breaking the engagement. Cade's arm came around her in a comforting squeeze.
I'm sure that wasn't easy.
How'd he take it? Laurie leaned into him, taking in the reassuring scent of his cologne.
Not well.
But I'm relieved, you know. It was the right thing to do. He's going to catch up with me later tonight to get the ring back. Then it will be over. He made it clear we won't be dating when this is over. His fair warning about her hurting him floated back, but she pushed away the misgivings. It was just a silly thing, he said. It's a little strange, Bree said. And how is he going to catch up with you to get the ring back? He's not in Rock Harbor, is he? Laurie thought back and realized she hadn't told Bree she'd seen Peter. He is. I saw him going into the Newell house. That's why I asked you who owned it. I wondered who he was here to see. I'll have to ask Dana about her impressions of him. Bree took Laurie's hand. Sure you're okay? Better than okay. I can focus on my job and building a future. I let Peter distract me. I wanted the perfect life all at once, you know? Bree squeezed her fingers. God's got a plan for your life. Don't run ahead of him. I'll try not to. Laurie rose and yawned. I'm in the mood for some pula. I think I'll run to the cafe. Want some?
I never turn down pula, her brother said.
Smiling, Laurie headed for the door, feeling lighter than she had in weeks. Chapter 32. This almost looks like a sleigh! The little boy bounced on the soles of his feet as if he could hardly stand still. But it's got sails! Boone grinned at the 8-year-old.
You ready to be a sailor, Tice? I'm going to show you and your parents how to get across the lake fast.
His small ice sailing boat only held 4, so this family of 3 was the perfect size. It would be a fun excursion with a kid's enthusiasm. His parents, Amber and Kyle, were an attractive couple in their late 20s. They held hands and focused on each other and their son. And it would get his mind off his investigation. His thoughts went round and round like a tiger in a cage all night long. Could Chris really have killed Renee and the other women? Lots of people had similar looks. Maybe he was jumping to conclusions. Morgan still hadn't called him back, but it was early on the West Coast. He had to be patient. Boone helped the family climb into the boat, then stood next to the vessel, released the brake, and grabbed the hold of the tiller. He pushed into the wind, then at an angle, before jumping in and trimming the sails. He showed the family how to tack the sails to take advantage of the breeze. Tice picked it up quickly and was grinning from ear to ear as the boat picked up speed across the frozen lake. The runners scraped across the ice and the sails flapped above their heads, creating the perfect sound backdrop to the feel of the stinging wind. The ice was a little rough and bounced them as they hit the bumps. A few hardy leaves clung to the bare branches of the trees that rimmed the lake. The sky was a beautiful blue bowl overhead, and Boone's sense of well-being rose a couple of notches. He should have been doing this before now. Staying hunched over a computer was not conducive to a happy attitude. He needed to bring Dana out here sometime. She claimed to hate boats, but there was no risk of drowning today. He'd checked the ice before bringing this family out here, and their puny weight shouldn't come close to breaking through the thick ice. The vulnerability in Dana's eyes drew him in ways he hadn't felt in years, maybe never. Seeing Esther again had made him realize his feelings for her had been pretty juvenile, based on looks and not character. He didn't plan to ever make that mistake again. He pointed out a remote boathouse restaurant on the other side of the lake. We're heading there for lunch. Anyone hungry?
Me! Tice shouted. I want a pasty!
The family was from New York, but they'd quickly fallen in love with the local cuisine. Kyle was even talking about buying a place here and opening a restaurant. The boat sped over the top of the ice toward the boathouse. Boone's cheeks stung from the wind as his gaze swept the ice for any protrusions like rocks or tree branches. As they neared the other shore, he spotted a figure moving from the ice toward a truck parked along the road in the trees. An old blue truck. His pulse kicked, and he reached for his binoculars. Once he focused them in on the truck, he looked at the license plate. Garrett's truck! Obviously, he hadn't left the area. Boone changed directions and headed toward the truck. The man had reversed course and was moving back toward the water. Boone wanted to see his face, though he was sure it was Garrett. The wind was too tricky in this direction to let his customer steer, so he couldn't use the binoculars.
The man stepped out of the cover of trees, and his face came into the sunlight. Bingo. Boone wanted to run the boat aground and grab him, but he didn't have any authority to arrest him. He couldn't even call Dana because there was no cell service out on Copper Lake. All he could do was grit his teeth and make for the boathouse again. As soon as he could get a signal, he'd let Dana know to be on her guard. Dana breathed a sigh of relief when she realized Chris was gone. She wasn't ready to talk to him about what Corey had said. She went to her room with Phantom on her heels, but before she stepped into the shower enclosure, she remembered she'd forgotten to get more shampoo. Chris wouldn't mind if she borrowed his. A message came in on her cell phone as she reached for her robe. The office wanted her to come back and work a double shift. Great. Just great. Dressed in a fluffy terry robe, she went barefoot down the steps to her brother's room and into his bathroom where she scooped up his shampoo and cream rinse. She hadn't been in his bathroom, so she took a moment to look around. It had it finished in real marble tile in the shower that complemented the travertine floors. An antique dresser had been retrofitted into a sink cabinet, and she touched its beautiful surface. Nice job in here. She went to his bedroom again and paused. It felt odd to be invading her brother's sanctuary, but Corey's comment about Chris's trophy box wouldn't leave her alone. Was it possible she didn't really know her brother? Her gaze swept the space. It was a big room with an expensive aqua Persian rug atop gleaming hardwood floors and furnished with heavy wooden furniture that had to cost the earth, too. The walls were a pale aqua color that complemented the white duvet cover and blended with the accent pillows. She should leave. What if Chris caught her poking around? But she couldn't force her feet to the door. This would be a great opportunity to poke around. Put her doubts to rest. She went to the large walk-in closet and flipped on the light. The illumination revealed neat rows of suits and dress shirts, as well as casual shirts and jeans folded on shelves. His shoes lined one wall, and she hadn't realized he owned so many pairs of shoes. He had more than she did. She walked the length of the closet, looking for anything that might hold his so-called trophies. There was a chest at the back of the closet, and she opened every drawer. The bottom one held a battered metal box that looked out of place in the pristine closet. About a foot square, its gray surface was chipped and dented. She lifted it out, but it wouldn't open. Maybe the key was here somewhere, too. A further examination of the closet didn't reveal any keys, so still carrying the box, she went back to the bedroom and set it on the bed so she could rummage through the bedside table. In the back of the top drawer, she found a small ring that held one key. It fit into the lock. She stared at the unlocked box and tried to tell herself not to open it, but resisting the impulse was as impossible as telling Pandora not to open her box. Dana had to know. Lifting the box, she blinked. She didn't know what she'd expected, maybe severed fingers or ears, but she hadn't thought to find the yellowed pages from various newspapers. What on earth? She perched on the edge of the bed and lifted the first article out to unfold it. It was an article about Renee's death. Her chest compressed and she stared at the picture. Why would he have this? Could it just be articles he'd found interesting? She wanted to believe it, but deep inside she knew it was more than that. She folded the newspaper clippings and returned it to the box, then started to sort through the other papers. The front door slammed. Her heart banged against her ribs, and she rushed to put the box back before she scooped up the hair products and ran for the door. She nearly collided with Chris in the hall. Only then did she realize she still had the key in her palm. She stuck her hand in the pocket of her bathrobe and smiled at him. "You scared me." His fists were clenched, and he was red-faced. He blinked when he saw her. "Dana, what are you doing in my room?" She forced a smile and held up the shampoo and cream rinse. "Raiding your bathroom. I ran out and forgot to get more. I just got home, but they're swamped at work and wanted me to come back for a few hours. I didn't think you'd mind." "No, no, of course not." His smile was a little wobbly when it came, and he relaxed his fists. "There's more in the guest bath, though. For next time." It was a warning to stay out of his room. "You okay? You look a little upset." "Fine." He drew a deep breath.
just going to take a nap for now.
He never took naps. She stepped out of the way. Sounds like a great plan. You're a little pale. Get some rest.
Chris hesitated, then grabbed her arm.
I've been a good brother to you, haven't I?
She stared into his blue eyes. Something was clearly wrong.
The best.
She kept seeing Renee's face in her head. What did Chris know about all this?
I always knew we'd be together forever. Your face is the last one I want to see before I die.
She mustered a laugh. You're not counting on making that any time soon, are you? I have plans to keep you around for a long time.
His brows drew together, and his grip on her arm tightened.
You would never hurt me, would you, Dana?
You're not like other women. You're the type who sticks around no matter what.
She stepped closer and palmed his cheek with her other hand.
You're my brother, Chris. I'll always be here for you.
What's this all about?
He shook his head and released her.
Go get your shower. It's nothing. I'm being maudlin for no good reason.
She didn't want to leave him like this.
Want to watch a movie after I get back? I could call Boone to join us.
His expression turned even darker.
Let's just keep it the two of us.
The door closed with a soft click, and she stood staring at it a moment. She breathed a thanks to God that Chris hadn't caught her going through his box, but what did it all mean? Acid churned in her stomach, and she didn't want to examine it all.
Chapter 33. The dispatch office already felt like home. Dana hung up her coat and greeted her co-workers on the way to her station. Karen and Tracy were already at their desks, though none of them were on the phone. The place held the scent of fresh floor polish, and the vinyl tiles gleamed. Karen glanced over at her.
Thanks for coming back. The place went nuts, and Mark had an accident on his way in. He's okay, but the other guy isn't.
The traces of gray at the temples of her hair were gone, and her hair was a little darker today.
I brought in brownies. They're by the coffee pot.
Thanks.
Are we celebrating something?
It wasn't uncommon for dispatchers to bring in food for birthdays.
Nope. Just trying out a new recipe. This one is made with black beans. It's pretty good, so I thought I'd share.
Sounds yummy. Dana glanced at her monitors, which were calm. She went to the refreshment area and grabbed a brownie and a cup of coffee, then carried it back to her station. Karen was a great cook. She pulled out her chair and settled into it.
What's been happening since I left? Any excitement? Things look calm at the moment.
In fact, they were so calm she had to wonder why they'd called her back in. The two of them should have been able to handle it.
Tracy swiveled in her chair to face her.
I've had all the excitement I can stand for months, thank you very much. I'm still looking over my shoulder for your Garrett.
Are you sure he's gone?
He's not my Garrett, and it's impossible to be sure of anything with him. He hasn't called, and I haven't seen his truck anywhere.
Has he contacted you?
Tracy shuddered and hugged herself.
No, and I want to keep it that way. The guy is downright scary. No wonder you were terrified of him.
Terrified. That's what she'd been her whole life. Dana stared at her monitors, still silent.
No more. Nothing could keep her in this paralyzing place but her own actions. Moving back home wasn't enough to change her life. No one could do that but her. She'd already found it was impossible to please others. Every time she tried to do that, she'd failed. Time to focus on pleasing the only one who mattered. Today was going to be a new start for her. A call came in on her monitor, and her pulse kicked as she answered it.
911, what is your emergency?
He's not breathing.
The young woman's voice held a note of hysteria. Dana glanced at the location monitor and rattled off the address only a few blocks from the firehouse.
Is that your location?
Yes, yes. Please, I don't know what to do. He can't breathe.
Her voice grew fainter as she spoke out of the mic.
Oh, baby, Mommy's right here.
Dana pitched her voice to an even calmer timbre.
Tell me what's happening. Who is the patient?
It's my little boy. He's only two. I think he has something stuck in his throat and he can't breathe. His face is turning red.
Do you know the Heimlich maneuver?
No, I mean, I've seen it, but I don't know how to do it. Please,
you have to do something.
There was no time for the ambulance to get there and save the little guy.
I'm going to tell you what to do. Listen carefully. While she was speaking, she shot a message to the paramedics with the location. Stand behind your little boy. She gave the mother instructions on how to perform the maneuver. I'll wait while you do that. The terrible sounds of the child choking were painful to hear.
Okay, I'll try. Pray for me.
Of course. Dana launched into a fervent prayer for the little boy to breathe. She ended the prayer but continued to pray silently until she heard the sweetest sound on earth. The child crying.
You did it! Oh, thank you, Lord!
The woman was sobbing, almost too hard to be understood.
He almost died!
She broke out in even harder sobbing. The paramedics are on their way, and they'll make sure he's okay. They may need to transport him to the hospital. Watch for them. You'll need to open the door.
Can you stay on the phone with me until they get here? You were an angel today, sent straight from the Lord.
The woman's voice sounded raw.
Of course. I'm proud of you. You stayed so calm.
Dana heard the little guy's cries taper off, then his small voice asked for a drink.
Sounds like he's doing fine. You can give him a sip of water. His throat is probably sore.
Okay. Dana heard footsteps, then the whoosh of the fridge opening. A thin wail built in the background.
Is that the ambulance coming?
Yes, it is.
Thank you for staying with me. He seems to be fine. I'm going to hang up now. What's your name?
Dana. You're Briley.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dana. I'll never forget what you did.
Smiling, Dana ended the call.
Phew, thank the Lord.
Karen rose and went to get some coffee. Let's hope all our calls go that well today. Dana's personal cell phone vibrated on the desk, and she looked at the screen before answering it.
Chris, is everything okay? You never called me at work.
And he'd seemed so strange when she left.
Sorry. I hope I'm not interrupting.
No, you're fine. No calls at the moment.
What time do you get off? I need to talk to you about something, and I'll stay up if I need to.
I just have to stay until Mark gets here. Maybe another couple of hours?
You're scaring me. Is it serious? Just a little bump in the road. It's not worth getting upset about. I just wanted to talk it out with you.
Her pulse didn't believe him. He was way too somber. She glanced at her watch. Only 4. Karen motioned to her and mouthed, "Go ahead and leave."
My co-workers have it handled, okay? I can come back and we can talk. Where are you?
That's great. I'm still at the house.
I'll grab some food from the Suomi and bring it there. That way, you don't have to starve to death just to talk to me.
She drummed her fingers on the desk. I'll be right home. The sun went down early up here in the winter, and the street lights were on as Dana sped down Houghton Street in her Prius. What could be wrong? Chris had been so mysterious and subdued. She turned onto Quincy at the light and headed for their house with as much restraint as she could summon. The radio announcer was making dire predictions of a massive blizzard headed this way. The house was unlocked when she let herself in.
Chris?
In here.
Sounded like he was in the kitchen. She hurried through the foyer to the door into the kitchen and found her brother sitting at the granite island with a glass of wine in his hand, and she'd rarely seen him drink. This must be serious. She took off her coat and tossed it over the back of a chair at the dining table.
What's going on?
He looked up at her with red-rimmed eyes.
Sorry to call you home this way.
She stepped to his side and hugged him, her fear intensifying when he gave a sob into her shoulder and clutched her. Patting his back, she tried to instill as much confidence as she could dredge up.
Whatever it is, we'll figure it out together. We'll fix it.
He shook his head.
It can't be fixed, Dana. I'm dying.
Her hands gripped his sweater, and she shook her head.
No, Chris, this can't be true.
He released her and drew a shuddering breath. His mouth worked soundlessly in his pale face before he managed to grate out any words.
It's true. It's pancreatic cancer. There's no good treatment, and I'm not about to let them dump all that chemo into my body in a fruitless attempt to stop it.
Pancreatic cancer. The diagnosis burned into her brain, and her knees went weak. She grabbed the edge of the granite and lowered herself onto the stool next to him.
Oh, no.
He nodded and ran a shaky hand through his hair.
I'm stunned. I need you right now, Dana.
Of course. You know I'll be right here with you.
What could she do? She knew a great naturopath in Colorado. Shauna Young might be able to help him. Dana would call her as soon as possible. Maybe she could talk Chris into flying out to Durango.
I want to be alone. Just the two of us. Maybe at my cabin in the woods so I don't have to deal with people asking me how I'm doing. I want to be in nature and not be thinking about anything else. Will you come with me?
How would they live? They both had jobs and bills. In spite of her questions, she just nodded.
I'll do whatever you want.
He smiled then.
You always have. I know you think I'm crazy and are wondering where the money will come from. I have some put back, but I'm not talking about forever. Maybe just a few weeks until I can get my head wrapped around this and make my peace with death.
She hoped that meant his peace with God. She intended to do all she could do to help him.
When do you want to go?
His dark blue eyes burned with turmoil.
Tonight. Right now.
Tonight? What about my job?
Call the sheriff and tell him you've had a family emergency and have to leave for a couple of weeks. I'm sure he'll understand.
She managed a nod. He would. Mason's a good man.
Okay. I'll pack some things and call my friends.
He shook his head. Please don't.
I'm not ready for the whole town to know what's happening. Maybe in a day or two.
But I'm supposed to do some SAR training with Bree tomorrow. She'll worry when I don't show up and will probably come by the house. Plus, Mason will tell her about my call. And Boone will be looking for me. We're dating.
Anger flashed across his face. I don't want Boone or anyone else to know right now. We'll worry about that tomorrow.
He clutched his head in his hands and groaned. I just have to get away before I go crazy.
She patted his shoulder. Okay, okay, whatever you want. I didn't even know you had a cabin.
Where is it?
I've had it about 5 years. I often go there in the summer when I'm off for a few days. I like to feed the porcupines and chipmunks.
It centers me.
He rose and headed for the bedroom.
I'm going to pack. How long will it take you?
No longer than an hour.
Let's make it half an hour. I've got to get out of here.
She caught the hysterical edge to his voice and rose.
I can do it.
After taking the stairs to the second floor, two at a time, she rushed to her room and pulled out her largest suitcase. There was no telling if there was a washer and dryer in the cabin, so she'd better pack enough for 2 weeks. And what about food? There was no way she could be ready to go in half an hour. In a frenzy, she threw in jeans and sweatshirts atop a jumble of underwear and pajamas. No sense in taking makeup. He might not even have a mirror there. Soap and shampoo were a must, though. She grabbed her Bible and her Kindle, then packed her computer as well. There probably wasn't internet, but she could turn on the hotspot on her phone.
Was that it?
She glanced around the large bedroom she'd come to love and suffered a pang of homesickness already. But Chris needed her. She couldn't let him down. Lugging the heavy suitcase, she descended the stairs and left it in the foyer before heading back to the kitchen. She found Chris at the open refrigerator throwing items into a cooler.
I'll get stuff from the pantry, she told him.
He pointed to a blue plastic tub.
You can pack the food in that.
She grabbed it and took the tub to the pantry. With both of them moving fast, the clock showed it had taken them just 1 hour and 5 minutes to pack. She helped Chris carry it all to his black SUV and loaded Phantom and his food in, too. Tears pricked her eyes as they pulled away. The future without Chris wasn't something she wanted to face.
Chapter 34. Frustration had nipped on Boone's heels all afternoon. There hadn't been cell service at the boathouse, and then he'd had trouble with the rudder, which had to be fixed before he could take his customers back across Copper Lake to his home base. Garrett had gotten into his truck and left, and Boone was frantic to warn Dana. The boathouse phone had been out, and it was after 6 and dark by the time they got back across the lake. 2 messages from Morgan were on his phone, too. Kyle had complained about the delay in getting home, but Amber had reminded him it wasn't Boone's fault. The family thanked him and hurried to their van as soon as they docked. Boone secured the boat, then whipped out his cell phone and called Dana. After 4 rings, he was dumped into voicemail. He left a message asking her to call him, then carried the gear into the office. She was probably at work and couldn't answer her phone.
He unlocked the office, then went over to his cabin. Spirit greeted him at the door. His dog usually came with him, but Amber had been frightened of his wolf-like looks, so Boone left Spirit at home. The dog paused long enough for a scratch on the ears, then rushed out the door. Boone heated up some soup and made himself a peanut butter sandwich, then let Spirit back in. He carried his dinner into the living room to watch the news while he ate. An hour later, Dana still hadn't returned his call. He tried again and still only got voicemail. There was no choice. He'd have to try the dispatch office directly. There was an alternate number, so he didn't tie up 911, so he punched it in.
Dispatch, this is Tracy.
He'd met Tracy Pitt a few times. Tracy, this is Boone Carter. Is Dana busy?
Her brother called her home, even though we needed her here.
She sounded miffed. The phones are crazy tonight, probably because it's a full moon. His stomach clenched. Chris knew Boone was suspicious. Surely he wouldn't hurt his sister, though. Boone shook his head. If Dana was missing, Garrett was the most likely culprit. Chris loved Dana. Has anyone tried to call her or gone by her place?
I don't think so. Why would we? Her brother called her around 4 and asked her to come home. Dana was worried it was something serious.
I'm going to run over there. I'll let Mason know if I find out anything.
He ended the connection, then called Bree.
Hey, Bree, you heard from Dana?
No,
not tonight. Why?
Boone told her what he'd found out about Garrett still being around, but he didn't mention his suspicion about Chris.
I guess I'd better head over there.
I'm worried.
What if Garrett grabbed her on her way back to the dispatch office?
You sure you're not overreacting just because she isn't answering her phone?
I don't trust Garrett.
Me neither. I'll come too. We'll see if Samson noses out anything. I don't have a key to Chris's house, though. Do you?
No, but that won't stop me.
He promised to meet Bree at the house in 15 minutes. Grabbing his coat, he called Spirit and took him along. If Garrett had Dana, Boone would need all the help he could get. The roads were slick as he rounded the curves into town. Bree's Jeep already sat at the curb behind Dana's Prius, and she stood on the stoop with Samson. If Dana's car was here, why hadn't she answered the phone? Boone got out and waited for Spirit to leap out behind him. Tail wagging, Samson came to sniff noses with Spirit.
You try knocking?
He asked Bree, who was huddled in an army green coat. She nodded. No answer, so I pounded on the door and shouted her name. I also looked in the windows, but the place appears to be empty.
And her car is here.
Bree nodded. Doesn't look good. I'm scared Garrett has grabbed her.
I'm going to call Mason.
Boone pulled his phone from his pocket and punched in the sheriff's number.
He's on his way, he said when he ended the call. Let me try calling Chris.
But the call went straight to voicemail. Boone went to the front door and jiggled the handle. With Mason on his way here, he knew breaking in the door was out of the question.
I'm going to go around back and look in the kitchen. Maybe the door's unlocked.
She nodded. I'll wait here for Mason. The 3-story brick building sat on the corner, so he skirted the side of the house and tromped through the snow in the minuscule backyard. There was a small deck back here with a gas grill and a tiny table with 2 chairs. He tried the door, but it was locked. The kitchen light was still on, though, so he moved to the window and cupped his hands around his eyes to peer in. The pantry door stood open, and dinner plates still sat on the granite counters. Several boxes of macaroni and cheese sat on the counter closest to the pantry. It almost looked as if Dana had left in too much of a hurry to clean up. Something about the scene made his gut clench. He retraced his steps and found Bree starting for the side of the house. He told her about the kitchen scene. He turned at the sweep of lights along the dark street and saw the sheriff pulling to a stop behind his truck.
Maybe Mason will have an idea.
He trusted Chris like a mouse trusted a hawk. Garrett's initial burst of elation ebbed as he stared out over the water from the back deck and watched the sun plunge into Lake Superior. There was more to this situation than it appeared. Chris had no reason to reunite Garrett and Dana. There was no logic to it, and Chris was one of the most logical men Garrett knew. His chess moves were legendary with their unit, and he had understood more about ambushes and how to avoid them than most generals. What was Chris's end game? Garrett had thought to abandon his initial plan about Dana and see if they could build a future together, but a dark rage swelled up in his chest. He'd always prided himself on being a realist. No amount of wishing would change what Dana had done. She had tossed his love back into his teeth. She deserved punishment. He'd be saving any future boyfriend from being taken in by her beauty and sweet manner. It was all a facade hiding her true nature. She didn't care for anyone but herself. She never had. Any love he'd thought he'd seen in her eyes was all a sham. She'd proven that when she tricked him into meeting her with her new man. He shook his head and went back inside. Time to put his plan into action. Garrett took off his coat and tossed it onto the table, then went to the garage and found two ropes he'd bought 2 days ago. He slung them around his shoulder, then grabbed the ladder hanging on the garage wall. He carried it inside and stood it under the great beam in the massive living room. Tying a bowline knot came back to him easily, and he secured the first rope on the beam, then did the same with the second, placing it about 3 feet from the first. He climbed down the ladder and looked at his handiwork. The rope ends touched the floor, giving him plenty of room to tie the slip knots on this end. But how did he get her here? Chris's involvement had messed up Garrett's plans. There was no time to grab her after work, so how would he snatch her from Chris? He didn't dare just go along with Chris's plan. Garrett would show up, and Chris would likely blow his head off. What if he headed to Rock Harbor now and staked out the Newell house? He could follow Chris and Dana from a distance and figure out where they were heading. He couldn't use the old pickup, though. The owners of this place would never know he'd taken their Lexus for a spin. Surely spare keys were around somewhere. He went to the kitchen and rummaged in the drawers. No keys. Half an hour later, he was ready to admit defeat until he got to the garage. Maybe. Just maybe they were in the car. Bingo. He found a key ring under the mat on the driver's side. Now to gather some tools he might need. He made sure his pistol was fully loaded, then grabbed a hammer and an axe from the array of tools along the wall. He might need one of them to break a window. He took a roll of duct tape from the workbench as well. Dana might object to going with him, and duct tape was perfect for securing her hands and her mouth. His last piece of equipment was a ski mask. It was a cold night, and no one would think it strange to see a driver in a ski mask. With everything stowed on the floor in the back, he opened the garage door and looked at the dash to orient himself. His gaze lit on a radio. Was that a police radio? Maybe the house owner was in law enforcement. He flipped it on and listened to the reports of a break-in at a local cafe. Grinning, he did a fist pump. Nothing about him on the frequency. For now, he turned off the radio and thought through his strategy. The stars weren't out yet as he drove along the narrow highway to Rock Harbor. Traffic was light as he drove down Houghton Street toward Quincy. He slowed as he turned at the light, then braked. Several cars, including the sheriff's, were parked outside the house. What the... He gawked at several people with dogs standing around outside. The sheriff talked to them, and he wore a serious expression. Had something happened to Dana? Garrett leaned forward and flipped on the police scanner. He winced at the squawk and turned it down. The broadcast was filled with small incidents, nothing that referred to Dana. How would he find out what was going on? Garrett slammed his palms against the steering wheel. He couldn't wait around for the law to lead him to Dana. He grabbed his phone and called a friend who worked for the police department in Chicago. In 5 minutes, he knew where Chris's cabin was located. And he had a very strong suspicion Chris and Dana were both there. Once the sheriff and his minions were inside the house, Garrett pulled away and headed toward Chassel. It was only an hour drive, but the storm was due to start in about an hour. He accelerated once he reached the highway and sped north. Chapter 35. M26 was a familiar highway to her, but with the dark night and empty road, it somehow felt alien. Dana glanced several times at her brother, but his flexed jaw and tight lips warned her against starting a conversation. She had to fight tears and still couldn't wrap her head around his diagnosis. She bit her lip and realized she'd never called Mason. She fumbled for her phone in the pocket of her coat, but came up empty-handed. Where was it? She was sure she'd left it there. Have you seen my phone?
I took it out of your coat and left it on the table. I didn't want us to be disturbed.
Anger burned up her neck, but she fought to control her response. She didn't want the tension to escalate. I didn't let Mason know where I was. The office will be worried when I don't show up tomorrow.
Chris didn't answer, and he whipped his SUV to the left. Her head slammed into the window. Stars exploded in her vision, and pain burst in her forehead.
Sorry.
There wasn't any true remorse in his tone. She inhaled and pressed her throbbing head against the cold glass. What was his problem? She was beginning to be frightened at the way he was acting. She wasn't ready to admit defeat. They'd fight this cancer. She'd talk him into seeing someone who could try an alternative method, maybe in Mexico or Europe. This couldn't be the death sentence it seemed. They'd been driving through the darkness for nearly an hour, and she needed a break. The lights of what she thought was Houghton lay ahead. You mind if we stop at the next gas station? I want to get something to drink and visit the restroom. He glanced at her, then shook his head.
No need. We're nearly there.
The SUV slowed, and he whipped the wheel to turn the vehicle right onto a dirt road. The potholes caused him to slow the vehicle to a crawl, but the SUV still bottomed out several times as it crept along the icy track of road. Where does this lead? She'd never been in this area before.
I have a cabin on Keweenaw Bay. It's nice and quiet, where I can think.
He pounded the steering wheel with both hands. I have to think. My life is unraveling all at once, and I can't stop it. Boone will pay for this.
Boone? What's he got to do with anything?
She curled her fingers into her palms and forced back a gulp. It's okay, Chris. We'll figure it out together. Don't think about it right now. The headlights punched holes in the darkness, but it wasn't enough to make the area seem familiar in any way. The evergreen trees loomed in weird, leering ways. She clutched the door handle. Look, Chris, let's just go back, okay? I want to talk to your doctor and see what can be done. It can't be as bad as you think.
It's worse, Dana. Much worse.
At least he'd calmed down, but his voice was flat and wooden, and something about it raised the hair on the back of her neck. Had he had some kind of breakdown at the news? The thick trees began to thin, and she caught a glimmer of water. A tiny cabin sat at the end of the lane. He parked beside the cabin and shut off the engine. Dana opened her door and stepped out into the wind blowing off the bay. She let Phantom out of the back and headed to the cabin. The snowpack crunched under her feet, and her breath steamed the air. This was probably beautiful in the daylight, but tonight, with the way Chris was behaving, she felt only trepidation as she looked out at the black water. Is it unlocked?
Nope.
He tossed her a key ring, then grabbed a lantern and turned it on.
You can unlock the door while I grab the cooler of food.
She nodded and went toward the cabin. The key turned easily in the lock, and she opened the door and stepped inside. It was cold, not much warmer than the outside. She looked around for a thermostat, but there was none. Chris stomped the snow from his boots, and she moved out of the way. The heat isn't on. I'll build a fire in a minute. Running water?
He shook his head. An outhouse on the other side of the cabin.
She shuddered. Mom and Dad used to come for a weekend away to the Hamar house in Chassel. We could see if they have room. We can't stay here with no running water. It's one thing in the summer, but traipsing to the outhouse in minus 20 degrees doesn't sound like much fun.
We aren't going anywhere.
His gaze, flat, yet somehow menacing, lingered on her. He stepped to the small counter on the other end of the room and set the cooler on it.
You can put things away in the ice chest, and I'll get the box of dry goods.
Fear was a hard ball in her stomach. Dana moved to the cooler and began to unload it. She'd have to get ice for the ice chest, and where on earth could she put the other things he was bringing in? Only two floor cabinets were in the space, as well as a tiny dry sink. And there was only one cot plus a lumpy sofa by the fireplace. She had to talk Chris out of staying here. She couldn't imagine sleeping here for one night, let alone the couple of weeks he'd mentioned before they left. The wind howled through the buildings with as much frustration as Bree felt.
She stood on the front stoop and rattled the doorknob with all her strength. "We have to get inside." Mason wore a knit cap with the word sheriff emblazoned across the front of it.
"I have no authority to bust down the door."
"But what if she's injured inside and can't get to the door?" Boone slammed his fist against the side of the building. "He's right. We've got to get in there." Sensing Bree's agitation, Samson whined low in his throat, and she touched the top of his head. "You saw the way the kitchen looked. Maybe an intruder broke in and he hurt her." Mason glanced at the door, then back at her.
"I could probably make a case for that."
He sighed and motioned to one of his detectives.
"Get the door open."
Bree stepped out of the way to let the man do his job. "If we don't find her right away inside, I'll have Samson search for Dana. That will tell us quickly what's going on." His gaze on his deputy, Boone nodded.
"It could have been a family emergency."
"Or Garrett could have taken her,"